Hello, and welcome to Mornings with Joel, Commercial Real Estate Podcast, where we focus on rising stars and established players in commercial real estate and talk to them about how they are building legacies in today's marketplace. All right, so Pam, good to catch up with you. We were catching up a little bit before we went live here, so good to hear about that. We obviously have walked some of the same streets up there in Manhattan, so it's all good stuff. But I wanted to invite everyone here. You're listening to the Mornings with Joel CRE podcast. And some folks have said, wait a minute, it's not morning anymore, but the show used to be in the morning, but it's still morning for our friends on the West Coast. So that's why we left the name the same. So good stuff. So we have a special guest today. We have Pamela West with Nuveen. And I'm really excited to talk to Pamela because she's been doing some big stuff right up there in New York City. And I think you guys will be excited to hear what she's been doing. And also, you may have some questions later on in the show, so feel free to ask her about those. So, Pam, how are you doing today?
I am great, Joel. And, thank you for inviting me to this show. I actually started listening to it a bit. So I was busy over the last year, but I'm trying to catch up on a lot of your episodes. And I realize that you've had a lot of friends and family on your podcast. So I feel honored to be on the show today.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, well, we got a lot of good friends and family that are doing some big things, right? So
absolutely.
It all works out. So so just for you guys that are listening in, if you're not familiar with Pam West, I'll tell you what, Pam, why don't you give us a little bit of background as to, you know, where you work and what you do, and then we'll go into a little bit of your background as to, you know, kind of how you got to where you are today.
Absolutely. I am Pamela West, Senior Portfolio Manager for Impact Investing at Nuveen. Nuveen is a TIAA-owned company. So we handle all of the asset management on behalf of TIAA and their balance sheet, as well as raise third-party capital in the market to invest in our different strategies across the platform. I sit in an impact investing seat that primarily focuses on investing in affordable housing and the preservation of affordable housing.
Okay. All right. Fantastic. And I understand that that portfolio of capital on the balance sheet that you guys are investing are in the B's right now.
It is. I think people don't know that TIAA, of course, you know, is a mission-driven company, and they manage. It was started on behalf of Andrew Carnegie, and so it's always been mission-based. It's always been focused on managing money for teachers and professors so that they can retire in dignity. And so, you know, with that mission aligned, they have always been an investor in social impact or responsible investing. That impact investing term was only coined about a decade ago. Mm-hmm. And so it's new to the industry, but they have really been in this part of their business for many decades now, and investing in the affordable housing space since 1992. So, it's not new for them, and we've invested with some of the, wonderful, incredible fund managers in the market, as well as done a number of our direct investing. But in 2017, in 2016, 2017, we did decide to do more direct investing. And so, Joel, that's where we started hitting the B's, as you say, mm-hmm. And ended up in the billions. So we definitely have a large scale portfolio of affordable housing today. That's just under about 7 billion.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm definitely going to dive into that a little bit more because, that's kind of probably why a lot of folks are going to be listening today, is to find out a little bit more about that impact investing and whatnot. But you had a long history. You didn't wake up and just land in this position. I think you started off at CBRE, if I remember correctly. So how'd you really kind of get your role in the industry?
I'll take you back even further than that. I come from a long line of teachers. And so I started out teaching eighth grade language arts in North Carolina. Yeah, that's I did that for a couple of years. All of my friends were headed to Atlanta, Joel. And so I left North Carolina. I went to Atlanta. And, as a teacher, you have to work year round. And so in between my next identified job, which I had as a teacher in the school system down in Atlanta, I said, hey, I need a summer job. What can I do? And I took this job at CBRE, helping them with their marketing packages, actually, is what I started doing for Malcolm McComb and his team at CBRE. Mm-hmm. And that just, I loved it. And it blossomed into, you know, a real career in commercial real estate. They were, you know, multifamily investment sales team. And so I was there for, you know, 7 or 8 years working with them. And I really just, you know, I found a passion working in real estate and decided to go back to, you know, business school, get my degree. And then I ended up at TIAA. And I really did that, Joel, because I, you know, being a broker is great, but mm-hmm. I wasn't satisfied with being in the middle of the transaction. I really wanted more decision making, you know, more control over what mm-hmm. was happening with the transaction. And then I also, because I was, and I started with the teaching piece, because there was kind of a misalignment working in that space with, you know, I questioned, what am I doing, right? Who am I serving? Who am I helping? You know, and I couldn't connect the dots until I actually got this position with TIAA. And I was like, oh, I can actually couple mm-hmm. this real estate passion with actually mission-based work. And so it all just really fell into place and made sense for me.
Wow. Wow. Okay. All right. That's interesting. You know, one thing, reason why we started this podcast, and many of our listeners know this already, but it was really to inspire those who are trying to get into commercial real estate. You know as well as I do the statistics around that, right? There's like 3% minorities in commercial real estate. And, you know, but it's a huge opportunity for a lot of growth and a lot of, you know, frankly, money that could be made, but it's hard to get in. And so to know that you came from a school teacher, eighth grade school teacher, all the way to managing billions of dollars in real estate is like unbelievable, right? But it shows it can be done.
It can be done. It can be done. And, you know, our company sort of takes a position of, you know, hiring smart people, right? Mm-hmm. And passionate people. And that's who we've employed in impact investing. And it's working out and it's working very well. And so that's what we're looking for as we grow our platform.
Okay. All right. Well, you bring up something that I actually wasn't even going to think about, but you mentioned about employing smart people. Do they have internships or how does that normally work if somebody wants to get into teachers?
Okay. We do have internships. We actually just started our interns this week. So we have a number of interns that come from Morehouse and Spelman and other historically Black colleges and universities across the country. So we have a huge internship program of both undergrads and grad students. Some of which make it into, you know, what we call a rotational program. Mm-hmm. And they take 2 years to rotate, typically between two different teams that first year. But it's pretty much guaranteed employment once you come out of that rotational program. So we've found some really great talent on our team, especially through that internship to rotational program.
Gotcha. And what cities do they offer that in?
Well, we have about 14, 15 offices across the country. So, you know, anywhere you want to go, we can pretty much find a spot for you. So we have a couple of people on my team now that are in Chicago, some that are coming here in New York. We have a pretty big base out in California in Newport Beach as well.
Okay. All right. I didn't know because some firms, it's just like the corporate office where they'll, you know, just have the interns or whatnot. But from what you're saying, it could be anywhere in the country. So that's good to know. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's, listen, you know, my plug for Nuveen, it's a great company to work for. I've been here 16 years. It's a global company. You can move around. You can really find what you're good at mm-hmm. and find the group that you want to work with. And you know, it's just, I think people in our firm really appreciate that about this business. Firm specifically. Yeah.
Gotcha. And you mentioned, and I don't remember whether this was before we went live or didn't go live, but you mentioned about Nuveen's relationship to TIAA. Are they a subsidiary or Was it spun off? Yeah, it's been around a while, if I remember correctly.
both firms have been around for a really long time. TIAA acquired Nuveen.
Okay.
And so TIAA is the parent for Nuveen. Nuveen is the asset management arm for TIAA. So we manage basically all of TIAA's assets.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. All right, sounds good. Now, you mentioned just a couple of things that are related to what you're doing now. There is direct investing and then non-direct investing. So on a non-direct perspective, how does that actually work? Are you an advisor to like the pension funds, or how does that kind of come together?
Yeah, so we raise third-party capital to invest in our strategies. So they're just a typical, investor, Joel, whether it's impact housing, affordable housing. You know, we have market rate housing strategies as well. We have, we cover industrial, retail. So whatever portion of real estate you want to invest in, we have an offering for that. We do some, or have done some, indirect investing along the way, which is really helping Joel, some smaller managers or, kind of startup managers, helping them launch their products.
Okay, gotcha. So is that more of like a fund to funds model, or how's that structured?
No, it's we will sit as an investor, right, for them. A lot of times it's great because it lends, credibility because we do a lot of due diligence. It lends credibility to, especially some of the emerging or diverse managers, that we want to support along the way. So that's how we use that capital. And we think about it in an impact investing kind of way.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, that's quite interesting. So what is that? Just a little bit more detail on that, if you don't mind. If we're like, what's the average check size? Is it development? Is it acquisition? Is it, certain markets? How does that all break down?
Yeah. So some of our earlier investments that we made with managers were anywhere between 25 million to 50 million, in a fund. We also have an impact credit business that we are starting up now, where we're looking at more individual deals and individual sponsors. So minority developers or minority sponsors or smaller managers who may need some balance sheet support. And so those investments may be, smaller. They could be as small as $10 million upwards to something larger, where we may participate not only in balance sheet support, but also participate in a transaction.
Okay. All right. Gotcha. And you said that's actually direct investment as opposed to, going through a third party.
Right.
I mean, Pam, just to be honest, and you probably know this as well as I do, if you're dealing with the pension funds, a lot of times once that money gets into that filter of that middleman, if you will, it's very dry coming out on the other side in a lot of cases. Right. I mean, it's where's the money? Right.
Yeah.
But the pension fund will say, yeah, we've allocated, $300 million to emerging managers or whatever. And then you'll see, $200,000 coming out the filter on the backside. So,
I do appreciate, Joel, that's a good point. And I do appreciate, we don't make those wild statements, right? That we're allocating $300 million to somebody, right? We have executed on that and we've done it, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's like, we're going to give you $50 million, we give you $50 million, right? And so it's not, I wouldn't say it doesn't come out the other end in that kind of filtered way that you just described. Like, we are really committing, right, to these partnerships, to these relationships, and we're not looking for a one and done. And I think that, a lot of the partners that we've worked with across the country will tell you that, we haven't just done one deal with them, right? We've done 8 or 9 or 10. We've really made a significant investment. And that's really because it's hard for us to do due diligence, right? We have to do a lot of diligence to make an investment. And once we do and spend that money, we want to make sure that that's a long-term partnership.
Right. Yeah. And I will say that, you know, without mentioning names, you have walked the walk in that regard, because I know some specific examples where you have done that and certainly helped some companies grow. So, you know, kudos to you and Naveen for, you know, not just talking the talk, but actually walking the walk. So I do appreciate that. You know, one of the things that we always talk about on the show is, you know, there was a lot of money that was earmarked after the George Floyd situation. And I'd like to get everybody's opinion of, you know, is that money actually hitting the street? Or is it, you know, I think I heard the other day there was something like $30 billion that was allocated or something. There was some huge number and like only $30 million actually went out or something like that. It was just crazy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, have you seen any of those allocations actually make it out on the street from all these institutions that claim to be putting money out? And if you don't know, don't worry about it. I'm just throwing questions at you.
I appreciate the question. And you know what? I think that there have been some efforts. I don't know the number, Joel. I wish, you know, somebody should do that study, right? And see what that number looks like. I don't think it's as great as what was promised, for sure. But I think what I was happy to see was there were a number of firms who stepped up and created programs like I'm talking about, right? This impact credit type program where it's like, where do we really help and invest, you know, vertically, right? Mm-hmm. Up and down the chain to help minority vendors, minority sponsors, minority developers really get sort of that lift or leg up, you know, and get started in a real way. And I think I've certainly seen a number of those programs. I don't think they've been fully allocated to your earlier, you know, point about like throwing out these wild, like we're going to allocate X amount of million or billion to that initiative. It's clearly not been completely allocated, but there has been some good movement.
Okay. All right. Well, sounds good. Sounds good. So
not enough. Not ever enough.
Yeah.
Not.
Certainly not. Yeah. And then, you know, sometimes the hurdles are so high, you know, it's like, you know, how is that going to really benefit anybody if they can't get there? Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's the other issue. You mentioned about affordable housing, impact investing, et cetera, et cetera. How does Naveen define impact investing, just to be clear for our audience?
Yeah, and I'll say what we've done in impact investing so far, and I'll set aside impact credit and what we're doing there for a second, is focused on affordable housing and what I would call deeply affordable housing. And it really comes down to what people are earning. Mm-hmm. And we look at residents who are earning 60% of AMI, our area median income across the country. And that's where our focus is. And when you focus there, you fall into kind of, you know, very defined categories of capital A affordable housing, such as Section 8, tax credit deals, as well as I really like what we're doing on the impact side in converting market rate deals to affordable by adding restrictions. And so we are preservationists. We want to preserve these assets long term. You know, we think about how we exit these assets and making sure that if we do have a liquidity event where we need to exit, that we are exiting it into the hands of another affordable housing investor, or in some way we've restricted that affordability long term so that, you know, it will be preserved in perpetuity, right? Mm-hmm, and so, so, you know, our biggest strategy is not to displace tenants.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah, that makes perfectly good sense from that standpoint. Now, you mentioned 60% AMI. I'm sure you could run into a lot of situations, especially in the urban core, where deals don't pencil at 60% AMI. So is there a certain percentage that you require, like a floor of 60% AMI rents, or how does that actually work?
Yeah, I mean, we follow the, you know, housing agencies or HUD guidelines to figure out what that 60% is. And you're right. All the deals don't work at 60%. Sometimes we do. We have some deals where we look at potentially going up to 80% in certain areas, right? Because there is an affordability need for that demographic as well, right, between 60% and 80%. But, you know, here at Naveen, we're all sector specialists. We focus on, you know, we become very specialized in areas that we invest in. We think that's better, right? It's not, mm-hmm. it's not just a hobby for us. Like right. we want to be experts in the industry. And so for me, I focus on impact investing. I focus on affordable housing. We have other groups in our organization who focus on like workforce housing and mm-hmm. value add strategies and market rate housing. And so they can address, you know, those assets within their portfolios. But for this one, that is how we define affordable housing. And, you know, we can get into it later, but, you know, one of the things that I like to, you know, just express about our strategy is, although it is a real estate strategy and, you know, we're making, you know, decent returns, solid returns through investing in affordable housing. For us, the real estate is secondary, right? It's the residents that are really important. And that's our real focus mm-hmm. Is, you know, how do we improving the quality of the unit? That's just our core competency. We've been doing real estate forever, right? We have $155 billion portfolio of real estate. So we do that, wow. right? That's we do that like looking at the back of our hand, right? So we know real estate, but it's really that resident and focusing on that resident's need and trying to improve quality of life mm-hmm. through the social impact piece where we focus. And that's where the topper of, right? That's what makes us an impact investor. It's the intentionality of investing in that real asset in order to improve every single tenant's or resident's quality of life, right? And we really like the ultimate goal is some pathway to ownership, some pathway to equity, right? If we could mm-hmm. turn over every single property and move residents along that path, like that would be successful for us.
Right, right. You know, that's interesting. We had a guest on our show a few weeks ago. He's an asset manager based out of Atlanta here that is doing some phenomenal things. And they're actually working on a model that will allow for $10 a month, people to get the financial advice that they need in order to get to that path of home ownership. And I think that's an excellent idea. You know, it might be worth making that connection. You know, we could talk about that offline, but that's the whole idea. You know, don't yeah. stick people in a situation where, you know, they're in public housing their whole life. I mean, coming out of New York, you've seen that as well as I have, where you have people 30, 40, 50 years, right, in public housing, you know, and then their kids are in public housing, right? You know, and in some cases, they don't even want to give up those apartments because the rents have some controls on them and everything else. So it just becomes cyclical, you know, as you mentioned. So very, very good point in that regard. Do you define a project as affordable if it's at a minimum of 20%, 60% AMI, or is there any range on that? It doesn't have to be 100% at 60% AMI, 100% of the units, right?
No, so. You know, so the tax credit program, which I'm sure you're familiar with, right, it's done a really good job. It was developed in 1986. It pulled together this public-private partnership, and I think that's mm-hmm. been great. It's developed, you know, about 3.5 million units in the U.S. since mm-hmm. 1986, which is not enough, right? We have a 7 million unit deficit today, right? So we need a significant number of units yeah. to address the housing mm-hmm. crisis. Mm-hmm. But the tax credit program has really focused on 50 and 60% of AMI, right? At 100% affordability. And I think it's fine, but I think as we need to address the supply in the market, we need to think about more mixed income strategies.
Right.
We should not be creating communities of 100%, you know, what we're calling that 100% affordable resident at 60% right. of AMI. That's not creating good economy, right? So we need to think about mixed income. Now, I will say I'm not necessarily happy with the way that the zoning is, you know, plays out across the US and that we're like looking at 20% of affordability, you know, at that level mm-hmm. In new developments. I think it needs to be more. I think it needs to be upwards of 30 to 40% mm-hmm. when we're looking at development. at that 60% of AMI level. And then you can fill in the rest with, like, you know, middle income, you know, that 80% right. AMI or even market rate, you know, mm-hmm. Residents. That is a better, right? That's a better format. And then introduce really wraparound services. So we shouldn't just be building affordable housing or mm-hmm. housing in general. Yeah. We should actually be thinking about community and adding on that healthcare component and adding on that educational component mm-hmm. and adding on those retail amenities that people need in a community to thrive. So yeah. That was my soapbox moment, Joel, but
it's but all good.
I truly believe that's the future, and we need to be innovative in how we're thinking about the development of housing in this country going forward.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly why I asked the question, because what happens is if you're doing 100% at 60% AMI, a lot of times it tends to gravitate back toward being what they just came out of.
Yeah.
Right. So unless you put that mixed income in there and kind of give that inspiration to, you know, step up to a higher level and maintain your property and do these other things, it just, you know, you don't want to be building a new ghetto, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Right? No, most people are aspirational. You know, they're right. not waking up every day going, I want to live in this affordable housing yeah. unit for 20 right. for the next 20 years. Right. People yeah, are aspirational yeah. and they should be able to matriculate through housing. And, right. and some of the things that we're doing in our portfolio that I think is just really fantastic work is, you know, we're figuring out how to skill up, you know, some of the adults, right? How mm-hmm. do you build skills to help them earn, you know, better income, to get better jobs? How do we help people get, you know, a GED? How do we help them get a degree? How do we tutor, you know, our children in the property and expose them to things, you know, such as real estate, right? It's mm-hmm. not just about being a realtor. Like, there's a whole different world out sure. there called commercial real estate mm-hmm. to expose kids to. And so it's really like implementing that social impact that, you know, will hopefully help people matriculate through housing, right? And not be stuck in a unit for 20 years and have their children live in that unit for the next mm-hmm. 20 years, which is, you know, which has been the cycle.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, it has been. Let me do this. We're actually at the bottom of the hour. So if you guys have any questions that you want to put in the chat or raise your virtual hand, we'll love to bring you on. And you can ask those of Pamela at this time. So we'll start taking those if you're interested in doing that. So, but I appreciate you saying that, because that's really, you know, the issue. You know, as I mentioned, growing up in the city, you know, I've seen that firsthand where people are just generationally in public housing. And that's a perfect segue to a deal that you just did. I understand is one of the biggest in the country so far this year. And yes, that deserves a big smile because it was a pretty impressive deal. So walk us through it, if you don't mind. What was that all about? You did a fantastic impact investing deal recently.
Thanks, Joel. Other than not having a life for the last few months. look, it's always been the vision of our firm. And I think, you know, to invest in affordable housing, to manage affordable housing, you also need to have, you know, you need to have an operational platform mm-hmm. to really do a great job. We have, you know, in a lot of ways relied on third parties to do a lot of that work for us. And it's been challenging in some cases because of the way that we think, Joel, as an impact investor mm-hmm. and how we want to implement social impact throughout our portfolio. That's a story that a lot of people aren't, you know, accustomed to hearing or, you know, executing on, because for a long time, affordable housing was owned by a lot of private owners, right? And it was just looked at as a real estate investment, passively managed. You met your compliance, you met your audit, but you didn't really think about who was living, right? Who was living in those properties?
All dollars and cents. Yep.
Dollars and cents. And it's a great investment. It's durable and stable. And every investor should have affordable housing in their portfolio because it makes sense. But to really do it well, I felt like we needed to be vertically integrated. And our company was really behind that because they TIA wants to do more of it. They really like this strategy. And so to do that well, we looked at this large portfolio in you know, that was owned by a credible New York operator here. And it was a great portfolio. They had done a great job managing it. They were aligned with us in, you know, thinking about residents and that social mission. Mm-hmm. And the people there were just fantastic. And our stories made so much sense together. So we acquired that portfolio, which came with about 550 people in property management, in development, construction mm-hmm. management. There's also a safety and security business that we now own. And so that is going to really just make us, right, operate more efficiently. We're going to be better operators. We're going to be better implementers of our program. We can really roll out our intentional social impact program with our residents, do all of the environmental stuff that we already do within the portfolio with, you know, the backing of all of that, all of those people and all of that expertise. So it was really exciting. It, you know, it basically doubled the size of our portfolio in AUM. And it's really going to kickstart what we're doing on what I just mentioned to you, that community development piece and being able to go out and talk to, and we have a wonderful government relations department here in Nuveen. So we've been meeting with mayors, you know, city council people all across the U.S. and talking about this community development. And they have been very receptive to it. And now we have, you know, the manpower, the woman power to mm-hmm. get it done. And that's what's really exciting is we will really be able to grow our platform, preserve housing across the country and add new supply.
Okay. All right. So the deal that you did in New York, you actually plan on replicating around the country in other markets from what you're saying?
Well, we plan to certainly acquire more assets, you know, manage more assets and develop deals. And we'll work with, you know, local partners in all of these different jurisdictions across the country to execute on that. So that, you know, it kind of rolls back around to what we're talking about with Impact Credit, Joel, and bringing in those local developers who care about their communities, right? Who cares more about their communities than you know, the person living there. Yeah. Joel, you would come here to New York, back to Harlem, right? And, you know, because it's personal for you and it means something for you to make sure that the residents are taken care of and that they have good housing options. And so it's personal.
And yeah.
So we want to roll that out. We want to roll that plan out across the country.
Yeah. Well, it is one of my my dreams. One of these days I'll get to do some big stuff up there, but that's certainly on the radar. So yeah. I appreciate you bringing that up. So this particular deal was because it's public information. I don't have it here in front of me, but what was the dollar amount? How many units? What city? I mean, I know the city, but what city? All that kind of stuff.
We had approximately 20,000 units in the books. This gave us another 12,000 units of existing assets. There are 8,000 units in the pipeline. So it really significantly increases the size of our portfolio. The properties were located in 7 states. So majority being in New York, of course. So high dollar volume. We didn't release the pricing, Joel, but but I can tell you, you know, it was a pretty huge portfolio of assets and just, you know, that company had done such a great job of, you know, developing, rehabbing, maintaining that portfolio. So we feel really good about what we acquire and what we'll do, you know, to implement social impact across that portfolio, like we're doing across our other parts of portfolio.
Sure, sure. Well, 12,000 units is nothing to sneeze at. So that's a big chunk. So certainly appreciate that. Let's see here. Ms. Redwine, you had a question here that you wanted to ask. What skills experience is of greatest interest to companies hiring interns? Okay, so that's a first question. You got any thoughts on that, Pam?
Yeah, I mean, for us, the interns we're hiring sometimes don't even have a real estate background. You know, they're looking at other types of industry, marketing. You know, some have no experience. You know, especially some of the undergrads, like this is their first job. But, you know, I do go back to like, we're just looking for really smart people. And, you know, diversity is definitely a key part of what we look for here at TIA. We have, you know, this has been the only company, Joel, I think TIAA, that had this succession of one Black CEO to another Black CEO. And we also have, you know, the CEO for Nuveen is also a person of color. And so diversity means a lot for this company. So hiring smart people, being inclusive, you know, it doesn't even matter if you don't have a real estate background. I mean, we provide a ton of training here too. There's a lot of opportunity to take courses, and our company's super supportive of that.
Okay. No, that's really good to know. I didn't realize at the time these other two questions are kind of related. Are these full-time positions or part-time remote positions? Where should one look for these opportunities? So what would you answer to that?
Full-time positions, they are not remote, and they are all over the country.
Okay. Yeah. All
right, we're good. Global. We're global too. So I didn't even talk about the global piece because my program focuses on the US specifically, mm-hmm. but we have a number of offices in APAC, in the UK, in Germany. So it's, you know, we have global coverage.
Gotcha. Gotcha. All right. Appreciate that. Looks like we're getting a bunch of intern questions here.
We just hired all of our interns, but next year.
yeah. This is a 2024 discussion.
This is a 2024 discussion for sure.
Let's see. All right.
And I'm not HR, so I apologize. Right. I can't answer all of your questions.
Yeah. All right. So, So former elementary school teacher as well, wanted to break into real estate. So is there information on this on the website just to kind of lump all those questions into one? Pam, or is there like some other website to go to or whatever?
On the internship, it is on our website, I believe. And there's a whole section dedicated to internships because we have a special HR team that focuses on colleges and universities.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. And do you go down as far as high school or is it all college?
It's all college. Okay. And I think that you have to be, and again, like this is, I'm not HR. I think you have to be at least a junior.
Okay. In college?
In college.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. So if I'm pronouncing your name right, Shauna, if I'm saying that right. I would say go to the website. Pam is not HR. So, you know, we'll defer those questions, but, you know, I'm sure you could get your information there as to what you need to know. So, all right. So we appreciate that. But thank you for participating and asking the questions that you have here. So that's fantastic. So Pam, looking forward, you know, obviously you're building the platform. You're the director there. You're getting a lot of stuff done. Where would you like to see this platform go? You know, what track are you on going forward? And where do you want to be, let's say, in the next 5 years in the direction of this platform?
Yeah. So, I just mentioned that our platform is U.S. based today. I do think we need to expand globally, and we're taking a look at some of those opportunities now. Affordable housing is not just a crisis that the U.S. is having. It's a global crisis. And it means different things in different locales. It's a very local investment strategy. And so we are looking at how do we invest in Africa? How do we invest in Asia? How do we invest in the UK? And what does that mean for the different types of programs, right, that they have? And U.S. housing and the way our U.S. housing works is very different from the way it works in other continents. But it is something that needs to be addressed. It's a growing issue because, you know, rent inflation and wage stagnation is the formula for a housing crisis. Right. And so that's what's happened here. It's happened elsewhere. So that's one point, is to move this into more of a global investment strategy. Mm-hmm. And then the second point is to really focus on rethinking, reimagining housing and the communities that we're developing, right? And understanding and using the tools that we have, you know, using the tax credit tool, if that works, but also just thinking about how should we live, right? How should we be living? Like, housing is essential. It's at the basis of almost every type of investment that we make. And so we really do have to think about incorporating the needs of residents and what and what will help those communities really thrive.
Gotcha. So that's good. Are there any markets that you would not go into because they're too small, or because I'm assuming you're mainly focused on, you know, urban markets of the larger cities where there are housing crises?
We're not really, because I mean, we have a lot of assets, of course, in some of the major primary markets. We also invest in secondary markets. We invest in tertiary markets. Some of the rural, you know, affordable housing needs more investment because it's been developed so far away from city centers, right? Yeah. And mm-hmm. and it's needed. Like, you can throw a dart anywhere in the U.S. and hit the tiniest or smallest city mm-hmm. or the most rural city, there is a wait list. I guarantee you there is a wait list to try to get a unit in that particular property. And that's, you know, that is the nature of the housing crisis across the U.S. So we invest where it makes sense. We do, as an institution, we need liquidity. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I can't go into markets where we can't, you know, exit a transaction or have some liquidity where maybe that asset is re-syndicated or put back into the tax credit program. And so we look at those, you know, kinds of things to sort of measure where we should make those investments. Mm-hmm. But no, we're in very small markets. We're in Mississippi, you know, all the way to New York, you know, to, you know, Newport Beach, Irvine, California, right? So we have assets everywhere.
All right. Yeah, I could see Irvine needing some affordable housing for sure.
They do, right?
Yeah, big time. So, absolutely. Yeah.
And a growing trend, Joel, a growing trend is, right, we have an aging population, and, you know, our senior population will need more housing in the future, as, you know, wages are not growing. Inflation's going up. And so there's a great need there as well.
You know, that's interesting. I actually had that brought to my attention the other day. There's an acquisition deal that I'm working on, and we were talking to the public housing, you know, sector, the Housing Choice Voucher Program. And they were saying that there was actually a glut of people looking for one bedroom apartments that are aging seniors, you know, because they're just not available. And I was not aware of that, you know, not really being in that market. So I thought that was quite interesting. And that's kind of to your point that we tend to think of the young ones before they buy a home as being the ones that need that affordable housing. But it's not just them. It's the aging senior population as well. You know,
maybe living
off Social Security. Yeah.
Yeah. They're on a fixed income, you know, and it's not growing. Mm-hmm, right. Mm-hmm. So they need the voucher. They need the Section 8 voucher. They need that project-based Section 8 housing. And you know, Joel, we own a number of senior or age restricted properties, and those one bedroom units are really important. And look, this is just a fact, nothing against you, Joel, but the, you know, women outlive men. And so sometimes when spouses expire, you know, it's just the one, you know, remaining spouse in the unit. And so, you know, it's really important to also think about that aspect of housing and where our population is trending.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's just a fact. There's nothing abnormal about that, or not abnormal, but inaccurate about it from that standpoint. Let me ask you one other thing just real quick, and you may have an answer on this, maybe not. How has the Fed's moves impacted your strategy? And, you know, are you thinking they're going to pause now, or, you know, inflation sits today at roughly 4%? What's your thoughts on all that? Because obviously all of us have been impacted by what the Fed's done over these last few months.
It has been interesting to watch. I've been in the business for over 25 years, so I've seen the different cycles. And, you know, these rates are still some of the lowest rates that we've seen over the
time.
Cycles. Look, there has to be some adjustment made from seller expectations, right? And it's taking some time to work that through the system, and that, yes, rates have moved. that means prices have to move too, right? What you're selling your asset for, what you're buying your asset for, that all has to make sense. And the debt has to be accretive, you know, to whatever asset that you're underwriting and buying. So yes, it has impacted, but also affordable housing, which is why I say it's such a great investment for investors, is it has a very durable stability and stabilized income, in that there's that inflationary hedging instrument, right? In that you're getting markup to markets in rents through the housing agency that don't really impact, especially on a project-based Section 8 or with a, or someone with a Section 8 voucher. It doesn't impact their payment of rent because they're only paying 30% of their rent towards, 30% of their income towards rent. And so it doesn't really impact them, but you're getting a markup to market sometimes in a down cycle. And you know, and then there are other adjustments that are made along the way that are nice inflationary hedges to affordable housing. But, you know, also spreads are tighter, right? If you're using Fannie and Freddie for financing, you'll find that spreads are tighter on affordable housing than they are in market rate housing. So the debt can still be attractive and accretive to assets that we're acquiring in the market. I haven't seen a time in the last several cycles, even in the down cycles, where, you know, people have stopped buying and selling affordable housing. It's still a very liquid asset. And that's why people invest in it. I think the hardest part is it's not a passive real estate investment. You know, it's high touch. It requires a lot of management. There's a lot of compliance and audit around it. And that may stump, you know, or hold back some investors from coming in. But yeah, it's always, I've never seen it slow down or, you know, that cycle stop of acquiring and selling affordable housing in any market cycle.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you bring up a good point. You know, we can almost draw a parallel with the COVID crisis and hotels. You know, a lot of the five-star hotels were really hit upside the head. But the you know, limited service type, you know, simple hotels, those tend to trend better. And I can see where very high-end luxury apartments could really get beat up with these market cycles as opposed to affordable. Because like you said, if the government is marking the market, the rents and those vouchers, then you're not going to see any impact from that standpoint. So that's a smart thing. And that's probably why I guess Nuveen loves that sector, because it, you know, it does make sense and it kind of gives them a hedge against other things going on in the marketplace. So it makes perfectly good sense.
Yeah. I mean, you know, for TIAA, who's our largest client, you know, they're managing the plans, 401k plans, you know, and annuities for many of their clients. And, you know, a lot of them are colleges and universities. And so they need to be able to provide some sort of, you know, stable return. And this is just a great investment strategy to do that. And it just aligns with their mission as well.
Yeah, yeah, no, fantastic, fantastic. So lastly, I know we talked about this a little bit early because you covered a lot of ground as regards direct investing, indirect investing. Is Nuveen doing just equity? Are they doing debt also? Or is, I don't know if that's all under your group.
No, it's mainly equity. Okay. We do a partner with some CDFIs on the debt side. And we also are a part owner of Impact Community Capital, which is a firm out in San Francisco that lends in the affordable housing market. So we do that more lending through the third party, through some third parties, than we do on a direct basis. But our program is mainly equity, and that's mainly where we'll grow.
Gotcha. And is that co-GP or just LP?
So we are anything. We're GP. Okay. we can take on all of those roles. We are, you know, GP, mainly GP. We can be co-GP, and in some cases LP.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Sounds good. And I think you said your minimum check size is 10 million.
It is. As minimum as 10 million. I mean, if we went, and I've heard this from other people, right? Other institutions have much higher bars set. than $10 million, but it really requires a ton of due diligence on our part. And so anything below that just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think it's for an institution, you know, institutional capital to have a floor of 10 is actually, I don't know if this is the right word for it, generous, but it's certainly reasonable to say the least because of all the due diligence. You know, I would have thought that bar would have been 20, 30 million as opposed to 10. So to your point, that's pretty good from that standpoint. So, you know, this has been a great discussion, a lot of good information. We covered a lot of ground. And you know what? I'll give you the floor for the last minute. You know, what would you want us to know? What would you want our listeners to know? And, you know, what do you want us to take away from this call?
You know, I think, listen, this impact investing space is growing. It's mm-hmm. growing significantly. I think it is becoming a part of any institutional firm. I mean, you can't not have it, right? Everybody right. needs to focus on some form of responsible investing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we've been focused on it in a big way. We will continue to focus on it in a big way. We're excited about what we're doing in the space. I think we do it a little bit differently in how intentional we are about mm-hmm. focusing on our residents, you know, and also doing well at real estate and doing good and doing well right at the same time. And so, you know, I'm just excited, Joel, to be here on your mm-hmm. on your podcast and appreciate what you're doing. Again, I think you're doing great work in this space. I've looked at your roster of speakers, and it's been just, it's wonderful and it's well-rounded. And, I'm happy to, you know, to see the exposure that, that you're providing to different types of real estate and what people are doing in the commercial real estate space in general.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that. You know, one thing I used to always talk about is how most people don't realize that 125th Street in Manhattan is obviously Harlem, where the Apollo Theater is, right? One stop on the D train or the A train puts you at Billionaire's Row, 59th Street. Yes. I mean, think about it, right?
Yes.
The
yes.
Columbus Circle, right?
Yes. Yes.
One stop. And yet and still, it is like worlds apart, you know, when you think of what people can see. You know, you have right. grand houses and all the public housing up on 125th Street. And then you have all the, you know, billion-dollar skyscrapers down on 59th Street. So right. it's just incredible. And to be able to expose people, because I know growing up as a kid, it was like, well, the only way out is either sports or hip-hop. Or actually, nobody was making hip-hop back in those days, so I take that back.
Yeah.
You know, but it was either that or it was drugs. You know, mm-hmm. you either mm-hmm. got to sell drugs or you got to get into sports.
Yeah.
But not realizing and being exposed to what the possibilities are, because oftentimes people don't see other people that they can relate to doing these things.
Right. And
so that's why, you know, I love what we're doing here, because it's exposing people to help them to see, hey, you know, it's not just sports or drugs. You can actually have a great career in commercial real estate if you follow the path of other people that have gone before you, you know, but you just got to know what those paths are and be exposed to it. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Great work, Joel.
Yeah, thank you. You know, as well as I do, a lot of us didn't even know that there were so many minorities doing so much in commercial real estate. So it was good that we were kind of able to get together and kind of expose this. So, you know, but I appreciate it. And Pam, you know, I really want to thank you for spearheading all the stuff you're doing at Nuveen, you know, with the balance sheet program, the GP, the LP, just all the ways that you're getting in to help do impact investing, help with affordable housing, and help other developers and other investors that are smaller that are trying to grow. So that's really impressive, because you can't always get an institution to back you, and you're certainly reaching down to give a helping hand. So, you know, certainly appreciate that. So this has been fantastic. This has been a great show today. So I certainly appreciate it.
Thank you, Joel.
Absolutely. So we don't have any other questions here, so we'll wrap up. And you all, we want to thank you for being with us today. This has been the Mornings with Joel CRE podcast. We want to give a special thanks to our guest, Pam West of Nuveen, who has certainly shared some very valuable insights on what they're doing to impact affordable housing amongst the communities here in America. And Pam, we certainly want to thank you for spending your time this afternoon with us. We certainly appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you, Joel.
All right. Have a great day. You've been listening to Mornings with Joel, Commercial Real Estate Podcast, where we focus on rising stars and established players in commercial real estate and talk to them about how they are building legacies in today's marketplace. Please check back weekly to hear our upcoming guests.